south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, I'm always talking about the gringo advantage. I think I even invented that term. And when you're out and about down here in Latin America, you'll find that it's in full effect, especially off the gringo tourist trail, every single day. And I like to point out situations where it's very obvious. For example, an incident that happened to me just yesterday. Now, first of all, let me preface this by saying that if you do come down to Latin America, you may not want to cut all your first world ties. But if you're like me and most every other expat, you'll find you've been given a huge gift that you never really counted on. That's if you take advantage of it and play your cards right, which is you're basically starting out in the Latin country of your choice with a completely clean slate. You're on nobody's list except the one at the airport when immigration checked you in. That's it. So now you have a second chance to have a very, very small footprint. And I mention this because now, for once, and probably the only time in your life, you'll be able to regain some of that anonymity, that privacy of yours that went down the tubes after 9/11 with all that hideous Big Brother legislation that was passed. Which means when you get down here, all of a sudden, you'll find you're not on anyone's radar unless you choose to be. And why would you do that? Well, that's because gringos are so conditioned to giving out their stats and dats to any official-looking pinhead who asks. What I'm saying is, don't make the mistakes a lot of gringos do when they come down and they get right back on that radar again. In fact, I can't tell you how many gringo expats I run into who regret some of the things they did when they first got down. Once again, just like in the U.S., they got on all kinds of personal, government, and corporate databases. Now, of course, this is the third world, and most of those databases are chaotic, jumbled, incomplete, and pretty much disconnected from each other, for now anyway. But down the road, they're bound to organize, tighten up, and interconnect. Which is why all smart expats do things like open up SA corporations and trusts, own real estate, businesses, cars, and other things in SA corporations too. Not to mention, they keep their homes and offices toned down and discreet. They don't put a happy welcoming plaque on the front door with the address, nor do they have a quaint fake coat of arms saying, "Welcome to the Jones residence." No big SUVs with baby on board signs either. That would be, well, stupid. So what other things do smart expats do to stay under the radar? They open bank accounts in SA corporations. They put their internet service in their corporate name. Their lawyer gets it in his name or his SA corporation. They use an IP changer or IP tunnel. They give their lawyer's address or a PO box at another location as their mailing address. They don't get on those idiot social sites like Facebook or WhatsApp or Twitter. And if they do, they sign up with a fictitious name, and they never post their own pictures. Like I said on last week's show, smart expats are always prepared when someone requests your dats to give out a little disinformation. You might even carry an alternate ID on you, like for example, a Cleveland library card, which will get you into most secure guarded office buildings instead of using your own real ID. Why should you get on anybody's database if you don't have to? Now, just like in the U.S., businesses here want to get data on their customers to target them for promotions and sell them more crap later. Which is why now, down here, so many retail establishments asked you for your name and your email address. Either don't do it or use disinformation. Just whip out that Cleveland library card. Or expat Eddie's favorite, an international driver's license. You know, you can get those on the internet. They're not legally issued by any state or country, so you can put anything you want on them. So is that illegal? How can it be? It's not authorized or issued by any state or country, like I said. So then you might ask, is it illegal to give people false information like that? Well, as long as you don't fake it with the government or an official document like a deed or a bank loan, who cares? Why should you give some idiot rent-a-cop in a guard shack your real ID? Anyway, expats have found a very good way to stay under the radar and be as anonymous as you can is to change your phone number once in a while. That involves getting a new SIM chip for your phone. I know for certain people that can be inconvenient. Some people want to keep the same phone number for years and years and years. I think my mother still has the same one from 1960. It's all right if you keep one phone number for very general stuff. But what about personal and very confidential stuff? Well, expats that I know, almost all of them have two phones, one for the general stuff and one for the classified personal stuff, the stuff they don't want to share with snoopers. So maybe they've got a contract telephone service that includes TV, internet, etc. That phone can be the general purpose phone. And of course, like I said, you should try not to sign up for that in your own name. Use an SA Corp or your lawyer's SA Corp, or he just might sign up for you as your proxy. That's what Latin lawyers are for. Remember, they provide a lot of services you've never even heard of. Again, is that illegal? Of course not. Well, maybe in the States, almost everything's legal up there now, right? But down here, in a word, uh-uh. This is the third world, you know. So anyway, a lot of expats I know have a contract telephone service. And almost always when you sign up for one of those services, they'll want to hook it up to a Visa or a MasterCard or a bank account so they can deduct the bill from your account every month. Though as convenient as that sounds, many expats have come to realize it's better not to link any account with a bank or credit card. Instead, opt out of the bank or credit card deduction thing and pay your bill right at the phone company. Or in fact, any bank. In Latin America now, you can go to any bank and pay any utility bill, including phone bills. Again, it's all about keeping a small footprint, keeping under the radar, and not linking your personal life, bank account, and credit cards. Because, you know, even down here in Latin America, banks and utilities and credit card companies will sell your data and disseminate it as they see fit. Are you going to read 3 pages of terms and conditions in Spanish? I doubt it. I never do. Though it's not as bad as the first world, there is that lag time effect, you know. That said, I repeat, with that second lease on your private life you get when you come down to the third world, don't start out on the wrong foot. Try to avoid getting your name and your dats in all those databases. Here's a few more tips. So anyway, I was saying you'll probably sign up for a contract service, and I just told you the best ways to do that. And by the way, if you approach your lawyer on that one and say, hey, can you give me a contract internet account or a contract phone line in your name, not mine? If he seems a bit hesitant at first or doesn't know what you're talking about, that would probably only be because you just might be his only gringo client, and no one's ever asked him to do that before. However, if your lawyer has a few gringo clients, he'll know what you're talking about. And surprise, surprise, often your lawyer will do these little things for you for nothing. That's why I always say you have to develop a long-term relationship with your lawyer. And on that note, I just had a discussion recently with one of my new expat lady friends. She came to one of our seminars, and now she's living down here in Latin America, too. We were on the subject of lawyers, as expats often are. I was mentioning the mistakes that so many expat gringos make when dealing with lawyers, including some of the mistakes I made the first few years I was down. I was talking about what I call the backpacker mentality. I'll get to that in a second, but first, I have to mention, a lot of gringos and expats come down with a built-in antagonism for lawyers because they've been screwed so many times by them up in the States. You know, lawyers up north get a couple $100 an hour, and if you phone one up, you're on the clock and being charged by the minute, even if you never get to speak to the shyster himself. You're getting charged even if you talk to his secretary or his paralegal. Now, down here, there's none of that. A lawyer making $200 a day is doing well. I'm talking off the gringo tourist trail, of course. Here, they still run their offices like lawyers ran them back in the 60s and 70s in the States. So anyway, when I'm talking about that backpacker mentality, for example, and this is a real case, a fresh new gringo will come down and settle in some Latin American country. Soon enough, he finds he needs a lawyer to help him figure out the paperwork to sign an apartment lease. Okay, then, some months later, he decides he's going to go for a temporary residency. Only now he's been there a while and he's been hanging at some expat bars and meeting other gringos and he's talking about such things, residency, etc. And he finds out from another gringo somewhere that residencies can be obtained through another lawyer cheaper. So he goes to that second lawyer and gets his residency started. Then, a couple months later, his U.S. driver's license expires and he needs to get another. Well, he's not going back to the States, so he'll need a Latin license. He finds out again by hook and crook, by talking to other gringos at expat bars, etc., There's a lawyer who's got an office next to the municipality by the Central Park, and if you go to him, he could do the whole thing in a half a day for $45. So our happy backpacker goes down, pays the guy $45, gets his license. Now the thing is, once you've found a lawyer that's doing good by you, and you see he's honest and upfront, you should not switch horses in midstream. Fact is, if your lawyer gets things done, even if he's slow as a snail by your standards, it's almost never worth it to change. And know this, lawyers down here are so damn cheap compared to their first world counterparts, it's not even worth shopping around to save a few bucks. And the fact is, as you have your lawyer do various things for you, you know, the usual drill, help you get your driver's license, bank account, car insurance, health insurance, write up an apartment contract, hook you up with cell phone, cable, and internet service, your SA corporation, purchasing a car, mail forwarding, and whatever translations you might need too, and of course residency. Not to mention, if you start a business, he'll be invaluable there too. Yep, your lawyer and his office will help you with all those things. Of course, it won't be him handling it all. He'll have a girl Friday that you'll get to know quite well when going through all these steps. So in the end, he's not just going to be like a flash of light in and out of your life. What you're doing is building up loyalty, confidence, and friendship with that guy. I guarantee in time, he'll be more than your lawyer. For example, if you're out late at night and get in a car accident, or you get in a jam, or your car breaks down, there's no better first call to make than to that lawyer. And if you've been spreading your legal work around with various different lawyers, none of them will really have too much loyalty to you, and they might not even pick up the phone. Now, I'm sure you've heard of a lot of those crazy mix-ups that gringos get themselves into down here in Latin America, especially if they don't speak any Spanish. You know, gringos who occasionally push the envelope and like to party. Not that that's ever going to happen to you, right? I mean, let's face it, they've made a lot of movies about gringos in foreign lands that have gotten themselves into trouble. So I ask you, when down in Nicaragua, who are you going to call at 1 in the morning when your car falls into a Volkswagen-sized pothole? Who are you going to call? Ghostbusters? I don't think they have a franchise down there. I'll tell you who you're going to call. Your lawyer and your insurance company. Probably your lawyer first. So my recommendation, if your lawyer down here is doing a job for you, even if he seems like he's doing it at a snail's pace, that's normal. I know this is Latin America, but things will get done. So have your insurance company, your bookie, and your lawyer on speed dial. Speaking of speed dial, now that's a dinosaur term. I mean, everything's speed dial these days, right? Anyway, like I said, you'll probably have a contract telephone service. Hopefully not in your name, but unfortunately, many gringos and expats who've never heard this show don't know they can do it any other way. Which is why so many new expat gringos start out with a bigger footprint than necessary. So what to do next? Well, I always recommend getting a cheap throwaway phone or an inexpensive smartphone and buying one of those SIM chips on the prepaid plan. You know, where you pay as you go, you load up with minutes at gas stations and tiendas. They're everywhere. You'll know they sell time because the phone company logos are plastered all over the walls. So then you buy the phone and it comes with a chip. Or if you have a new phone, you can just buy the chip. Now, SIM chips down here in Latin America are around $5 or $6. And they throw in a bonus of about 100 free minutes. Now, this is going to be the phone you use for secure conversations and private stuff, remember? But when you go in to buy one of those phones or get one of those new SIM chips, you'll be defeating the anonymity and the privacy aspects if you pull out your passport or driver's license and hand it over when you buy it. Now, you have to know that all throughout Latin America, recently, all countries have passed laws stating that you have to show your national ID or passport to buy any phone, prepaid or not. Now, if you go to a bona fide telephone office, and down here in Latin America, there are 5 or 6 main telephone companies, one being the landline company and the rest being cell phone companies. And the names, well, you've got Movistar, Tigo, Claro, and a few others. Anyway, if you go into one of their real bona fide offices, you'll have to pull out your passport or a national ID card. No exceptions. However, and here's the amazing part, they also sell phones and SIM chips at thousands of little private kiosks. And if a Latin person buys a phone or SIM card at an independent kiosk, they'll have to pull out their national ID. However, if a gringo shows up and tries to buy one or the other, you can pull out your passport when they ask for it. Or you can tell them you don't have it on you. It's at home. It's at the hotel. Or you could say, I don't have my passport with me, but I know my passport number. Or, more often than not, they'll see you're a gringo and they won't even ask you for anything. They'll just give you the SIM card or the phone. And when they're doing the paperwork and stumbling over your name, not speaking English, of course, more often than not, they'll hand you the paper and ask you to fill it in. And where it says name, passport number, or ID number, give it your best guess or put someone's name down who's truly despicable. You know, Obama, Hillary, Bush, Dick Cheney. In fact, you know, since I heard expat Eddie bring this up some months ago, in El Salvador, Hillary has hundreds of phones registered in her name. By the way, I heard to get even with Bill, she's seeing Caitlyn Jenner these days. Just a rumor. So anyway, I started out today by saying that the Gringo Advantage is alive and well because just yesterday, I bought two such chips at one of those little kiosks and I was asked for no ID, nor did I have to sign a thing. So why was I buying SIM chips? Well, I believe, like underwear, SIM chips and phone numbers should be changed frequently. And for the average gringo or gringa, who'd like to maintain a small footprint and a low profile, I'd say change SIM chips about every 6 months. And slightly more frequently, your underwear. Again, the question is this illegal? Come on, this is the third world we're talking about. And now, for the latest in drug smuggling news. Now, I don't know if you listeners know this or not, but when Hugo Chavez died, everybody, I think, but the U.S., sent a representative to his funeral. Now, what you didn't know was that the president of Costa Rica was caught flying to Hugo Chavez's funeral in a plane used for drug smuggling that was owned by the second biggest drug smuggler in world history. Gee, how'd that happen? Well, it was all over the Costa Rican newspapers, but I'm sure you didn't see it. So, the second biggest drug smuggler in the world, a Colombian, lent this plane to the Costa Rican president. She asked no questions, of course. Anyway, soon enough, this drug smuggler was captured and extradited to the U.S. for trial. And again, the DEA said he was the biggest drug lord since Pablo Escobar. So he pleaded guilty in the U.S., got convicted, and now no one, and I mean no one, not even the best journalist, can find out where this guy is, what his sentence is, and what prison he's in, if any. He just kind of slid off the map. And in other Costa Rican drug news, you might have heard that Paris Hilton owns a mega ranch in Costa Rica, and while her parents were visiting, there was a plane discovered on that land loaded with large amounts of cocaine. Way too much for personal use, if you know what I mean. Even for celebrities and jet setters. And how'd that story play out? Well, it just kind of faded away. How about that? And in more drug news for you telenovela lovers out there, otherwise known as soap operas in the States, guess who was caught red-handed smuggling drugs through the corridor of Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Guatemala, and Mexico? The second largest television network service in Mexico. Surprise, surprise. It's called Televisa. Check it out. It would be the Latin equivalent of NBC, ABC, or even TNT. You with me so far? And here's how it worked. Anyway, the second largest Mexican television network has mobile TV units and vans all throughout Latin America. You know, picking up on the evening news and all that. And of course, filming those shit-for-brains telenovelas. Anyway, in Mexico, they're now calling that station Narco Televisa. What happened was this. There were three television mobile vans caught crossing Latin borders with, get this, $9 million in cash and a heavy load of cocaine in hidden compartments. Now, the thing is, you see, down here in Latin America, Latin society is absolutely enamored with anything that has to do with television or telenovelas. So, what a great cover they had, huh? Because of the so-called glamour and fame associated with a television network like that, normally border guards would suck up to them and just wave them right through. So, who knows how long this has been going on? 10, 20 years even? Until this little slip-up, TV vans like that were practically immune from being searched. So, those are the kind of people that are involved in the drug trade. Celebrities, politicians, and high-end businesses. In fact, in Mexico, they say you can't tell the drug dealers from the cops or the politicians. Come on, we knew that. And here's something that's really weird. If you pick up any big Mexican newspaper, or Guatemalan, or Nicaraguan, Panama, Costa Rica, whatever, at least once every week or two, you'll see a map of Mexico drawn with areas shaded in where the top five drug cartels are operating. Kind of like states within states. So if you're interested, from week to week and month to month, you can see which gangs are gaining presence and which ones are losing. And by the way, here are the top five. There's the Zetas, the Sinaloas, the Knights Templar, the Gulf Cartel, and the Mata Zetas. And that last one, Mata Zetas, really makes me laugh because what it means is kill the Zetas. And besides running drugs, that's what they do. They kill the Zetas and vice versa. Yeah, so you can kind of get the idea that these guys don't like each other. Anyway, like I said, every week in the paper, you can see the map of Mexico and where the cartels are, how their territories are expanding and contracting and all that. Now, of course, the U.S. is the number one drug-consuming country by far, right? And once those drugs get shipped into the States by those five Mexican cartels, all those massive movements of money and drugs have to be organized and arranged, right? But the funny thing is, you never pick up a U.S. paper and see the U.S. mapped out into regions controlled by drug lords and drug operations like Zetas, Sinaloas, or Mata Zetas. So what's the point? Well, somehow, all the U.S. illegal drug delivery systems are seemingly whitewashed in the press because they just never show up. So who's in charge and what areas do they cover? Well, you can pretend that the U.S. government and the CIA and politicians like the Clintons are not involved in the U.S. drug trade. Just like we can pretend that the U.S. dollar is real money, the unemployment rate is 6.1%, Tom Cruise and John Travolta are not gay, vaccines and GMOs are good for you, and Obamacare really cares. So then, who do you think runs the wholesale cocaine business in the USA? Unlike newspapers in Mexico, you won't see names of cartels shaded in on maps of the U.S. So then who's running the show? The sociopaths at the CIA or some sociopathic Colombian drug lord? Your choice. At least in Mexico, it's private enterprise. Oh, and by the way, if you still think the Americans are the good guys, did you know that a C-130 heavy cargo transport plane was found at the Mexico City airport? So then what's strange about that? Well, inside was $100 million in cash and $1 billion in cocaine. And guess who it belonged to? It was registered to the U.S. Forestry Service. And guess what? Never reported missing. Bet you didn't read about that one in the Chicago Tribune or the Cleveland Plain Dealer. So then with all the other horrible crap going down in the U.S., the economy, Obamacare, TSA, GMOs, vaccinations, you name it, well, as far as the drug business, who's got the upper hand? The CIA or the Zetas? Or maybe it's Pfizer and Novartis. That said, how about Latin Americans and Bitcoin? Well, we know countries with failing economies like Argentina are very big on Bitcoin. They've got the second biggest Bitcoin exchange behind Brazil, whose economy is also taking a dive these days. Did you know that the use of Bitcoin in Venezuela has more than doubled since 2014? Some analysts are predicting Bitcoin adoption in Venezuela will explode beyond anyone's imagination in the next few months. And as it turns out, there seems to be a firm and solid rule developing around Bitcoin, which is the more a formerly stable economy crashes and burns, the more interest in and use of Bitcoin. In fact, all the Bitcoin references on social media in Venezuela have the tag that says, in Spanish, of course, protect yourself from inflation. Use Bitcoin, and then it gives the internet address that shows people and businesses how to get on board. Another reason Bitcoin's on the move in Venezuela is that in order to travel abroad or shop online, you're only allowed to take $300 per year. That's per year. But since so many online sites are taking Bitcoin, like eBay, Venezuelans can legally bypass that law. Now, an email. It starts out, "Hi, Johnny. Please send me that free ebook, Fast Spanish, if I'm not too late. I was also wondering if you had a book coming out, listing information such as contacts, places you recommend, all your sources of info, etc. I would be happy to buy your book. Also, maybe attend a less expensive seminar in the future. I don't see how retirees trying to save money can spend a few $1,000 attending a seminar in Latin America. Not that it's not worth it. I'm sure it is, but seems for a lot of us it's just not feasible. You're a very smart person to listen to, and I really enjoy it. Sometimes, though, I'm not sure I could convince my wife of the poor hygiene and other downsides of living in Latin America. Thanks for everything, Joe." Okay, Joe. First, let's talk about the poor hygiene issue in Latin America. Well, you know, you're a first world person, Joe, and in your own house, you keep up those first world standards. And you will in the house or apartment you live in down here, too. And in Latin America, all upscale sections of town, upscale malls, etc., have first world standards too. If you come down here, you'll see what I mean. There are lots and lots of places in every city in Latin America that are absolutely first world. In fact, you wouldn't know them from the nicer places in Seattle or Cleveland if it wasn't for the fact that people are generally shorter, tanner, happier, and everything's in Spanish. And Joe, as far as what you say about convincing your wife, that seems to be a universal problem. Convincing your better half that you better get the hell out of the U.S. It almost always turns out if you're not both on the same page, it's just not going to happen. No matter how much you want to go and how great you build up your case, if she or he, depending on the case, doesn't want to go, you got trouble in River City. Now, Joe, as far as the seminar cost, you point out that retired folks probably can't afford it. And it's true, if they've got no savings and are just on Social Security, it's probably true. However, most of my listeners are not retired yet. And a good percentage of them that are retired have savings and or have a combination of Social Security and a pension. The fact is, this seminar's for everyone. Why? Because I'm always seeing new, fresh expats making typical clueless gringo mistakes in selecting their location, housing, lawyers, insurance, healthcare, transportation, etc. Many of them cultivate friendships with questionable people just because they speak English. That's all you need is to have a con man get his hooks into you, gringo or Latin. And you know, I'm considered slightly above average by most people and kind of frugal, and I still made all those stupid mistakes in my early years down here. I figure in the first 5 years or so, I threw away 50 grand in stupid deals and purchases and bad advice, bad lawyers, etc. So the value of my Expat Wisdom Seminar is that I can guarantee new expats will save tens of thousands of dollars and avoid those countless stupid mistakes and errors that so many fresh gringos make. And through the many good contacts you'll meet, I can alleviate a lot of relocation stress. And who can put a price on that? Now, that's not to say you won't make some mistakes along the way, no matter how much you know or how much time you spend with boots on the ground. Making mistakes, that's the human condition. It's just that when you come to the seminar, you'll find you can truly avoid some of the whoppers. That said, we're about 3 weeks away from my July 2015 Expat Wisdom Seminar. Just go to expatwisdom.com, click on the seminar link, and check it out. Have no fear, we'll hold your hand the whole way. Last seminar, an 85-year-old lady came down. And guess what? She wants to come down again. That means she'll be a repeat offender. In fact, I've had a number of people take the seminar twice, three, even four times. I'd say that was a pretty good endorsement, wouldn't you?
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.